Now, this leads us to a few objections, counter-objections, and qualifications. And after these have been dealt with, I should like to conclude by trying to rise above antagonism and agreement. It may be said that some psychotherapists are interested in meditation, even practice meditation, that they have indeed incorporated meditation among their own methods of treatment. So it may be said that there's therefore no need to go to a meditation teacher. You can just still go to the psychotherapist. And in any case, the psychotherapist is a much more modern and scientific type of person. He speaks a language that we can all understand. And in the case of the psychotherapist, there's no mystification. There are not even any mantras. Now, it's true that some psychotherapists do utilize traditional Oriental meditation methods to some extent. But they utilize them only as psychological exercises. And this, one may say, deprives them of at least half their value and significance. Because the full value of these methods, the full value of these exercises depends upon their being pursued within the total context to which they traditionally belong. And we can verify this for ourselves in our own experience. Suppose, for example, we're practicing the mindfulness of breathing exercise. Now suppose we practice it on our own, in a very ordinary room. And suppose we practice it just for the sake of calming our minds, enabling us to get through the day, to work, whatever our work may be, more effectively, more efficiently. Now we'll certainly derive a certain benefit, even a lot of benefit, from the exercise practiced in this way, within this particular sort of context. But suppose then we practice the same method in a group. Suppose we sit with a number of other people, not just anywhere, but sit with them in a shrine, a place which is especially dedicated, especially devoted to the purposes of meditation. And suppose that in the shrine there's a sort of altar, and suppose that on the altar there's an image, a figure, of the Buddha, reminding us of what we're aiming at, what we're trying to achieve, what we're trying to realize. And suppose also on the altar there are flowers, suppose candles have been lit. And suppose perhaps before getting down to the practice of the mindfulness of breathing exercise, we do some chanting, maybe in a language we don't even understand. And suppose when we come to do the exercise itself, we do it not just to concentrate the mind, but also to develop positive emotions, to develop insight, to gain a glimpse of reality. In other words, so that we can evolve, so that we can grow, so that eventually we can become enlightened, so that eventually we can become like the Buddha, can become Buddhas ourselves. Then if we practice in this sort of way, with these sort of associations, in this sort of traditional context, then the overall effect of that same exercise is very different. In a sense, it's the same practice, the same method, the same exercise. But in that different context, in that wider and that richer context, it means very, very much more. It possesses a far greater significance. Consequently, we get far more out of it. Now, the same principle applies in other ways. Psychotherapy is said to be applicable to all those who feel ill and suffer from their psychic state. But the question arises, what is illness? How do we know when we're ill? We can't answer this question, what is illness, without first determining what is health. Illness is illness only in relation to health. And again, we can't determine what is health in the case of a human being without understanding what is man, without understanding the nature of human existence, the nature of life itself, without understanding even the nature of the whole evolutionary process. And this sort of understanding, psychotherapy as such, does not have, does not even profess to have. It doesn't have it because it has no philosophy of existence. Indeed, we can press matters even further than this. People suffer from their psychic state. And some at least, perhaps quite a large number, suffer because their lives as human beings, their lives here and now in society, with their friends, with their families, at work and so on, their lives seem to have no significance, no meaning, no overall purpose, no real goal at which they can aim. In other words, what they're suffering from is really the lack of a philosophy of existence, a philosophy of life. If you want to put it very crudely, in the crudest possible traditional terms, they're suffering from lack of religion. We remember Jung's remark. Jung said once that of all the patients who had come to see him, there wasn't one whose problem was not, at bottom, a religious one. So what man needs is not so much therapy as such, not so much a cure. What he really needs is a philosophy of existence in which he can believe, which he can accept as true, a philosophy that will give significance to his life, within the general framework of which he can live and grow and develop. But psychotherapy as such doesn't give this. Now, does this mean that psychotherapy is useless? Does it mean that no one should ever go to a psychotherapist or a psychoanalyst? Are all the analysts' couches to be left vacant? Not only that, what are the various methods of treatment discovered by psychotherapy? Many of these methods are extremely useful. Are they to be discarded altogether? Or is it suggested that they should be taken over, appropriated by the teacher of meditation? Now, I'm not proposing that all the psychotherapists should at once be put out of work. In any case, there aren't enough meditation teachers to take their place. But I do think that teachers of traditional type meditation should know more about modern methods of psychotherapy. Not only know about them, but be able to use them. And not use them in a haphazard sort of fashion, but use them understanding exactly what part they play, what part they can play within the total context of the higher evolution.